just about 12 minutes after 12 o'clock. And we'll talk to Frank Sennett from Crane Chicago. There's a story that is in Crane's. We'll talk to Frank about the number of immigrants in Chicago and how they're not coming here anymore. I think in the latest look, I don't know if it was from the Census Bureau. I'll have to look it up again. But the latest sort of study of immigration populations and increases, I think Chicago ranked 8th. So we'll talk to Frank about that. Louis Lazar writes for the Chicago Business Journal, and he is in the studio with me this afternoon. Louis, welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Good afternoon.
How's your summer going so far?
Well, I'm loving it. The weather couldn't be nicer.
It's always funny to me because you're mic a little closer to you, but you're a Kentucky guy, right?
And right.
You don't like hot weather.
I do not.
That's been.
But
pretty...
I survived it for many formative years, so I'm still in there.
Here's what I don't like, Louis. I don't like going to a movie theater and being confronted with fancy food and few seats. I want to go back to the days of the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. And
the movie palaces?
Not even. Just where you would go to the multiplex and there'd be 75 empty seats for every movie.
Yeah. Well, I ran into this problem big time. I was going to see a screening of Angels of America. It was a special one-off screening. I went over to this Webster place that Regal operates, and they had these new fancy-dancy seats that take up huge amounts of space. There were only 70 seats in the cinema.
Exactly.
I got there a half an hour before curtain. There was no luck. I had to race to another theater. I'm not a big fan of it either.
We went to see The Big Sick. Now, my family hates it because I bring this up all the time, but we went to see The Big Sick. You know, it's a fine movie this summer. We saw it 2 or 3 weeks after its release and still had to sit in the front row because there were so few.
I had one seat in the front row where I was going, and I said, I'm not going to, 4-hour movie, not going to work.
Well, how was the movie?
Well, when I finally got down here with him, literally the second the movie started, it was not as great as I hoped it was going to be, unfortunately. But it's all about the food now, you're right.
Well, because they're trying to figure out how to compete, I guess, with TV, and I don't think they're doing it the right way.
Well, it's going to be a costly experience, all these high-end food options they're throwing.
You wrote this week about AMC coming out with a new menu, or what's going on there?
I mean, they've got everything that's on the flatbread pizza, all sorts of, you know, caramel mixes. They're giving Garrett a run for its money. I mean, they're really, trying to be as much a food vendor as they are a movie theater.
And the idea is that people are going to go and...
The food and stay for the movie.
If you make it a bigger night, that they're more likely to go out. Because not just enough to go out for the movie anymore.
No, apparently not. Not from the research they're getting. I assume they wouldn't have gone to this trouble of installing all the equipment it takes to produce all this food unless they think there's a real reason to do it.
Well, I do hope they succeed, obviously. It's great to go to a movie, but it's great to do it on the spur of the moment, to say, let's go see a movie.
Well, exactly.
And it's just harder and harder to do now. And that...
You've got to give them this incredible seat to sit in, or else I guess people are saying, well, we'll take our money and do something else.
Yeah, I would much rather sit in a plain old seat and know that I could walk in 5 minutes before and see the movie.
I'm with you.
All right, so there's that. But Louis writes mostly, well, I shouldn't say mostly, but often about airlines, right?
And that's quite often, yes.
Well, where should we start? Should we start with the on-time landings or the close? Let's do close. Louis has been a thorn in the side of American Airlines. He finally got them to change their... uniforms,
right?
Because thousands of people complained about being sick.
Well, around 7,000, I think we're talking conservatively at this point.
I mean, legitimately had an impact,
right?
And now a couple of the workers have filed a lawsuit,
right? I mean, some attorneys here in Chicago, Siprit, I believe is their name. They were watching all the stories I was writing, and they contacted a few of the flight attendants and said, "I think you all may have a case here." So they filed a lawsuit last week in federal court here in Chicago, and they're going to see how it plays out. I mean, it wasn't against American Airlines. It was, I should quickly add, it was filed defendant as Twin Hill, the supplier of the
uniforms.
Which
is interesting to me that they kind of chose not to sue their bosses.
Right. I figured that wouldn't be probably the wisest move. But it really is the suit, the uniforms, and Twin Hill is the real culprit here, I'm afraid.
So there's that, and we'll see how that goes. Louis has been writing about that for well over almost a year.
Well,
right? September?
10 months.
10 months, okay. Another story out recently was the on-time performance for, I think, July.
Right.
And American came in, was it
last.
Fourth? Yeah, fourth among
last
the big...
Last of the four major
I almost said
carriers.
Fourth among the big three, which would have been really bad. So Delta was number one.
Right.
Delta's not really around here much, right?
No, they're a small player in Chicago. They do know mostly to their hubs from here, Atlanta, Salt Lake City,
United, number
Detroit.
Two.
United Limited. Well, that's just the big news, because they had been lagging badly because they couldn't get the performance they needed out of their regional vendor operators. But they've really been pushing hard for these last 4 or 5 months to get more, to get better performance out of them, and it's really starting to show up.
Is there a big difference? Can I think Delta was number one at 80% and America?
77.5 for United, and Southwest was 75.3.
So it's really not that big of a difference, though.
Well, it doesn't seem like that much when you talk about in pure percentage. When you talk about the number of flights that are involved in these, though, that becomes a bigger factor in the, how many people are on each of those flights. So it may seem small in a percentage, but we're talking about thousands, tens of thousands
That's
of flights
point.
Here.
All right. British Airways made news this week when it comes to O'Hare, right?
Big news.
The big mama is coming to town.
Big. I mean, we've been waiting years for this. I mean, the A380, as a 747, which was our double-decker plane of note up until now, the A380 is fine. It's been flying internationally for other carriers a lot, but it's never been in the U.S. So.
And it's bigger than a 747, comparable to a 747?
It's much bigger than a 747 because the double-decker part of it isn't just in the front of the plane. It runs
the
entire
thing.
Length of the fuselage. So it seats about the British Airways one that's coming in here is going to seat 470 people.
Wow. And they're going to go from London to
Chicago.
So who does that hurt?
Well, it's going to hurt most, I'm afraid, United, because they have the oldest and least comfortable planes flying that route.
Right.
American has just installed in June Dreamliners on all their four Chicago, London. So that's a very comfortable alternative. But United has put most of their new planes on the East and West Coast and not here in Chicago, unfortunately.
All right, Louis Lazar, you can read more at bizjournals.com and all this. Thanks for coming by. It's
My
always
pleasure.
Good to see you.
No ways.
Enjoy your summer. We'll talk again soon.
Sure.
A little sports-oriented today because in the second half hour, we are going to talk with Paul Reynolds, the head of consumer research at Value Penguin. And they did a study on ballparks around the country, what it costs to go to a baseball game. Not all that unique. That comes up from time to time. Sadly, Cubs fans pay the most. They did it, though, not just in dollars, but in hours worked, which is sort of an interesting way to look at it. The idea is that they factor in cost of living in the area as well. And so then they come up with a different figure, not just the dollars, but how much you'd have to work to go to a ball game. How much would you have to pay to fly to a ball game? Well, that's a question we are going to present now to a couple of guys on the phone line. Todd Rubin and Arturo Gomez are the co-founders of Big Game Air. Actually, we're going to talk, I think, to Arturo Gomez instead. We lost Todd. Arturo, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Excellent.
Hey, listen, I went to Marquette, so I need a flight from Executive Airport to Milwaukee to go to a basketball game. Do you have those?
Yeah. I mean, we probably won't. But yeah. That game, you know, we're really focusing, Steve, on the highest demand games in the region. So perhaps for the March Madness, though.
Yeah, I can take it. Now, tell me about this idea that, you know, there are guys who, if they can afford it, they want to go to a ball game, say an Ohio State football game, fly out there in the morning and come back that evening. And you guys have sort of found that niche and you're figuring out a way to make it work. I think Todd's on the phone with us now as well. But Arturo, tell me about how this works.
Yeah, so it basically, as a consumer or as somebody who's desiring to go to one of the games, you'll go to our platform, which is our website, and you'll be able to look at the entire schedule that we have posted. And again, our focus is really attacking the highest demand games in the region at a particular time of year. So right now we're moving into college football. You mentioned Ohio State. We actually are doing quite a few games for the Ohio State Buckeyes because they're such a high-demand sports team. So basically you would buy your ticket, your seat, or your multiple seats on the site, and you would get notification, obviously, as you approach that date, just like you do with commercial airline. And we handle everything. So we handle all start to finish, you know, obviously the flight logistics, all your ground logistics. And it's basically a one-stop shop. So
your
beverages.
You're just up and running, right? So you haven't had your first trip yet.
Our first trip is September 9th.
Okay.
And September 9th, we have three big events on that day.
What's the average cost for one of these trips?
You know, the average is anywhere between $1,200 to $2,200 with a main average medium around $1,500-$1,600.
And Todd, is it the sort of thing where can I come to you and say, look, I've got a group who wants to go to this game. Can you set up a flight, or is it only from you to me?
Sure. We offer that, and that's a natural spinoff of what we're doing. That would be a straight charter. So if you had, let's say, 10 people and you wanted a flight to a particular game that wasn't listed that you had interest in, we could certainly arrange that.
And so is it, I mean, I don't know the numbers here. This isn't, I'm not sort of in this market, but couldn't I just go and charter my own flight for cheaper, or why? What's the advantage of going through you guys?
Well, the advantage, is, sorry, Arturo, go ahead.
Oh, no. So Steve, I think the answer is yes. I mean, that there is an opportunity for individuals to go and to try and charter their own aircraft, but it's the same kind of respect or the same response that I give to many people. It's like, you know, you can go to a grocery store and buy a number of steaks and take those home and cook them, but are you going to get the same type of product you would in a premier type of steakhouse? So, you know, Todd and I are bringing our hospitality experience to this, and so we're providing a service. It's a high-end luxury product where we're handling all the logistics start to finish, and that's where the added service fee or the added service charge, I think, is really justified. But the other thing is that you would legitimately need a group of around 8 to 10.
To make it work, yeah.
Really make it work. So if you're two people or one individual that really wants to go to this game, then we're right in that sweet spot for you.
All right, okay. I've only got 30 seconds left. I don't care which of you answers the question, but it seems to me like you've got a good idea. There's certainly money here to pay for this, but you got to figure out how to spread that news, right? It seems to me like marketing is going to be your big key. Now, I think radio advertising is a great way to go, but how are you going to get the word out?
Yeah, so we're doing some really strong influencer campaigns. We are working with a really talented PR team, and we have a great digital campaign and strategy that I think is going to work. But we're going to get all that kicked off next week, and we'll see. You know, we're really optimistic.
Arturo Gomez, Todd Rubin, the name of the company, Big Game Air. Where do people? What's the website? How do they find out more?
BigGameAir.com.
All right, Todd, you had broken off earlier, but I told Arturo I like to go to Marquette games in Milwaukee, so I don't know if you have helicopters or what to get me up there, but I'm always interested.
We'll make note of that and see if we can get you up there, certainly.
All right, guys. Hey, good luck. It's a great idea. I hope you work.
Thanks for your time, Steve.
Thank you.
12:37 on this Wednesday afternoon, and to the soulful stylings there of our bump, we turn to Frank Sennett from Crane Chicago Business, a soulful man in his own right.
That's right.
Welcome to the Biz
that's
Lunch.
That's right, Steve.
What's up, soul man? Hey,
yeah.
A couple weeks ago, I had on a researcher at Ball State University, and she was talking about how small town Indiana needs to do a better job of sort of recruiting immigrants, because the kids who are growing up there, they're moving out, and it's the immigrants who are coming in and are fulfilling or filling sort of needed jobs, needed crafts, needed trades and things like that. So she argued that the county governments and municipal governments needed to figure out a way to invite immigrants. Now, we hear Mayor Emanuel all the time being very pro-immigrant in the city, inviting them in, calling it a welcoming city. There's the fight over the sanctuary cities. And here's the story that Greg Hines wrote about in Cranes about the fact that when it comes to immigrants coming to different cities in the U.S., Chicago is starting to really fall behind.
That's right. For many decades, in the 1990s and the 2000s, Chicago ranked fourth in terms of immigrants moving into the city, just behind New York, L.A., and Miami. But now we are really dropping. From 2000 to 2016, we were barely a sixth of what New York brought in from immigration and a third of L.A. We only had 148,000 immigrants come in, and it didn't even come close to covering our loss from other cities and domestic migration.
And that's the point of it, right? I mean, that's why it's important that, second generation, third, fourth, fifth generation Americans tend to move out of older urban areas. There's a drain there, and they are supplanted by immigrants. But if we don't get the immigrants coming in, the city will suffer.
Right, because the birth rate isn't quite keeping up. We're basically holding serve right now, starting to fall a little bit behind. And we rank eighth now in the U.S. Behind Washington, D.C., Houston, Boston, and San Francisco. And we're really neck and neck with Dallas and Philadelphia, too. So Chicago used to be this beacon for immigrants, just like New York and L.A., and for some reason, we just aren't getting the immigration that we need to sustain our population.
I don't want to be tied with Philadelphia for anything.
all things being equal, I'd rather be in Philadelphia.
Right.
Don't subscribe to that W.C. Fields line.
And the piece shows that even the Poles, you know, there used to be a great community for Polish-born immigrants, eventually Americans, but where it was 69,500 in the year 2000, we're now down to about 40,000. So, you know, you're a longtime resident here. You watch all of this. Is this an issue that needs to be? Seems to me like the mayor's doing what he can to address the whole thing.
Yeah, it was interesting at the rededication ceremony yesterday for the Picasso. I was down there for that, and sorry I had to miss your show to be there. But a lot of the speakers were talking about how we're a sanctuary city and immigration is welcome. And this was the Consul General of Spain was there because this was a gift from a great artist of Spain. And they're talking the talk. They're fighting in court for the sanctuary city money. But I think we need to do more to market the city to immigrants that can come in and contribute to the economy.
Yeah, the Picasso, I love the whole Picasso story, how, you know, it was introduced as sort of this monstrosity, and now it's just as much part of us as anything else. So that's definitely an excused absence. That's okay, Frank, that you were there.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate that.
Kim just did the headlines. I think 7-Eleven now is the latest store to be sued over its collection or miscollection of the Cook County sweetened beverage tax. It's a very confusing story. And then you had the county, right? The county was suing the people who sued them for lost money. Can you explain that for me?
Yeah. So the Illinois Retail Merchants Association had sued to stop this. Had gotten an injunction for a while, but now it's in effect, as we all know. And so the county sued for damages, sued the association and said, we want all the money we would have gotten in the weeks that you held the law in abeyance. Well, that had such a blowback from pretty much all quarters that the board president, Tony Preckwinkle, has announced that they've dropped their effort to get the merchants to pay the county $17 million in damages.
So, it seems like, you know, it seems kind of unprecedented, doesn't it? So you start something, someone goes to court to challenge it, the judge holds it up, and then you want to hold the sewer responsible for the money you lost. I don't think her odds were very strong there.
No, and the judge said it could have a chilling effect. He said it may be permissible, maybe not, but it was a bad government policy because, you know, then it discourages people from filing, decent claims against the government,
right,
or reasonable claims against the government. So, yeah, so she's backed off on that. Polls are showing it's incredibly unpopular. We've got now she's got a potential challenger from the board for the presidency spot next year, basically using this as a wedge issue,
which is
so
kind of poetic justice.
It'd be great.
It's kind of poetic justice, right? Because she came in running against Todd Stroger and his sales tax increase.
Yeah, the 1 cent sales tax increase. It's funny. It's like a tax revolt seems to be where the rubber meets the road on these new presidencies. So it looks like Westside County Commissioner Richard Boykin is making noise about running against her. He would have to give up his seat in order to run for the board presidency. So may or may not happen, but he's saying that this new pop tax and the way it's been introduced seems to be a rallying cry, and he's doing a lot of social media to rally people against it, and he voted against it. And it could be a heck of a race.
Well, it's an interesting thing because, the advocates are still running radio commercials here on WGN. The vote's been taken. The court challenge has been made. The tax is being collected. But the ads are still running against it. There must be some end game, some plan. Okay, so we have less than a minute left, and now we're going to talk about a job that Frank Sennett wished he had. Julia Kramer works for what? Bon Appetit, right? Traveled 35,000 miles, eating more than 1,000 meals in 40 U.S. cities and small towns as she came up with Chicago as being the best restaurant city of the year. Now, I know you're one of those guys who buys subscriptions to restaurants, so you certainly enjoy fine dining. Boy, this would have been a nice gig for you.
Yeah, I would have loved to have done that. But, you know, I'm glad Julia did it, because back when I was editor of Time Out Chicago, I actually hired her as a dining critic, gave her her first food critic job, and she has gone on to great, great things. So I would very much trust her recommendation. And, of course, we all love the fact that a national publication has once again recognized that Chicago is the tops for fine dining.
I tell you, yeah.
You know, kudos to Julia, but she never invited me to dinner. Not one of those meals. So.
Well, that is not right. We got to fix that. But, you know, it's nice. The James Beard Awards are here. The Bon Appetit Award. Chicago's getting recognized as the great restaurant city.
That's right.
So I'll see you at Papa John's for lunch, okay?
You will be there.
Frank Sennett, we'll talk again next week. Read more at chicagobusiness.com. Thanks, Frank. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve.
Big day in Springfield. They are unveiling the butter cow for the state fair. So all eyes on that. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Well, if the state fair is not your thing, maybe it's baseball. Tickets for Wrigley Field or Guaranteed Rate Field on the south side. We're going to talk now to Paul Reynolds, the consumer research chief at Value Penguin, because they had an interesting way sort of looking at the ballpark and the cost for the ballparks. And he joins us on a phone line now. Paul, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks very much.
You bet. So tell me about, you look not just at the cost of parking tickets and all of that, but also at sort of not just the cost of living, but average income at each market. And that's how you came up with your rankings. Explain that for me.
Yeah, so we thought it'd be interesting to not only look at the prices at each of the parks for tickets and parking and food, but to plot it against the average income, which, of course, it ranges widely from city to city. And through that, we were able to get a measure of how many hours in each city the average household would have to work in order to take three people to the park, pay for parking, get hot dogs, couple of beers and some soft drinks. So that's how we did it. It was a measure in hours.
And the idea was that, right, so I guess Boston, where people make a lot of money, they might rank differently because based on their average income than they would, say, in Oakland.
Correct. So, for example, Boston and New York, but in the Yankees, for example, both of those are very expensive, more expensive even than places like Chicago. But because the income, the average incomes in those cities are pretty high, they actually turned out to be a little bit more affordable than some cities that had much lower prices, but also a lower average income.
All right. So if we're talking in hours worked, what's the average for a major league city? What's the average number of hours someone has to work in order to take his or her family to a game?
Well, we figured it's around 4.5 hours of work to take three people to the park and with all the extras. And that's with an average season ticket price. So that's what it comes out to be on average.
It's 4.5 hours of a 40-hour work week. Factor in how many hours you're working to pay a mortgage, your insurance, your car, gas, all of that, and then 4.5 hours to go to a ball game. Not a small chunk. What is it here in Chicago? Because I have an idea that the chunk for the Cubs are probably going to be bigger than 4.5 hours.
Correct. In fact, the Cubs is one of the least affordable teams of all. Came out to be about 7 hours of work to take people to Wrigley Field, to take your family to Wrigley Field, to pay for everything. So that's definitely one of the less affordable places in the city, which probably isn't a great surprise to Chicagoans who are going to Wrigley
right.
often.
You know, and you broke up a little bit. I think you said 7.2 hours a week, right?
7.2 hours a week is what it is on average, right?
And then to go to see the Sox, it's significantly less. And this is an apples and apples, I guess, because you're considering the same income level or cost of living income level when you figure out these costs, right? So the White Sox, the Cubs were, I think, most expensive at 7.2. The White Sox at 4.7. And that just has to do with the fact that it's less expensive to go to a Sox game.
Right. By our calculations, if you go to a Sox game, you're going to be paying on average about $75 less in all to take your family. So that's a big difference. But, of course, you know, as we
don't say it. Don't say it, Paul. Don't say it.
Yeah, right, right.
We all know what kind of product is going on in the South Side right now.
That's right.
A couple of hours from now, the Cubs are going to wrap up their series out in San Francisco. Now, I would think that the Giants would be sky high when it comes to the cost of seeing a ball game. But again, factoring in where they are and what people make there, they're kind of smack dab in the middle.
Exactly. So that's a great example. You know, the average income in San Francisco is very elevated together with a lot of other costs of living. So, you know, even though it's a reasonably high tab to see the Giants, it's a pretty affordable day out compared to a lot of cities.
Still costly, probably pretty much no matter where you go. Have you looked at this historically, how it is today compared to what it would have been 20 years ago?
You know, that's a great idea. We haven't done that. It'd be something maybe to follow up with. My suspicion, and there are probably people out there that are better baseball historians than me, is that the games have become significantly less affordable. I mean, I think
right.
If you look, you know, just at the trends, I think it used to be a lot more affordable to go to a ball game. And as we know, with the way salaries and so on have gone, it's really gone up a lot.
Paul Reynolds, the head of consumer research at Value Penguin. Great to talk to you today. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.